This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here, we enlighten you with the ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirzadeh Waqifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wa ma takunu fi sha'ni wa ma tatlu. وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَلَا تَعْمَلُونَ مِنْ عَمَلٍ إِلَّا كُنَّا عَلَيْكُمْ شُهُودًا وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Quran, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth, or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater, but it is in a clear book. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Fighting resumes in Gaza after a truce expires with Israeli airstrikes and artillery fire hitting Gaza City. An Israeli captive in Gaza holds regime's prime minister responsible for the death of his family in indiscriminate airstrikes on the Palestinian territory. And American media says the U.S. has provided Israel with more than 70,000 weapons consignments since 1950. Hello everyone and thanks for tuning in to World News. Israel has resumed its bombing campaign on the Gaza Strip after a temporary truce ended without any new extension announced by both the regime and Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. Now the Israeli military has officially announced the resumption of combat in Gaza. Airstrikes and artillery fire have hit several locations in the Strip, including in Gaza City and Khan Yunis. Palestinian media said the strike in the southern city of Khan Yunis hit an area near Nasser Hospital. Explosions and gunfire were even reported in northern Gaza in an hour before the truce expired. Israel also said it intercepted rocket fire from the besieged enclave, and sirens have just sounded in Israeli settlements near Gaza. And joining us now from Vancouver, Canada, is Khaled Barakat, journalist and activist. Hello, Mr. Barakat. It's been an hour and 30 minutes now that this temporary ceasefire that we saw for over a week gives some relief to Palestinians has now expired. What are your concerns?
Well, the resumption of the Israeli war crimes and atrocities against Palestinians in general and in Gaza in particular has come with a full U.S. green light. The Israeli war minister, Gallant, today, while standing next to Blinken, he basically said that they are going to resume their aggression against Palestinians in Gaza. And this will not happen without the United States' full support. In fact, this is also a U.S. declared position. We've heard that from various different United States officials who support Israel attacks on Gaza, and this whole big lie on avoiding casualties of civilians is just a United States lie that no one is buying. The resistance also understand, and they have been ready for such Israeli positions. So far, the Palestinian resistance did not issue any declared position, but they are, of course, fighting back. And let's remember that, yes, there were 7 days of so-called human pause, but Palestinians hospitals in Gaza did not receive any real assistance. Some of these hospitals received zero assistance. And so the Israeli government feels that they don't want to crumble and fail immediately, because any extensions of ceasefire or permanent ceasefire, the Israeli government will collapse. And there were threats by ministers in the government that if the Netanyahu doesn't resume this war, that they will resign and the government will fall. I think Netanyahu himself is interested in also resuming his war crimes against Palestinians in Gaza, because he doesn't want to go home, as Israelis, you know, say. Either you continue this war or you go home. And basically, you have a society that is fascist. As a society, they're fascist and they're mobilized for this war. On the other hand, the Palestinian resistance have also sources of the resistance have told us that this was one of the scenarios that they are expecting, especially that Israel wants to impose conditions on the resistance in terms of the exchange, you know, prisoners. The resistance consider Israeli soldiers, women soldiers, that they are soldiers, and Israel wants the resistance to release these Israeli soldiers, as it has been happening in the last 7 days, and this is not going to happen. Israel have been able to get some of their captured prisoners without war in the last 7 days, but now they will get nothing, and the you know, attacking Gaza again, it's not going to get Israel any real beneficiary. The only thing that it will happen, that it will extend the life of the Netanyahu government for probably a few weeks or a few months to come. But that's it. Other than that, Israel is going to continue to witness a failure after failure, because the resistance and the Palestinian people will fight back.
And we hear about the displacement that's part of this systemic attack on Gaza. The Netanyahu government, now the truce is over, how far do you think they're going to push this carnage in Gaza, Mr. Barakat?
They are going to push this until they're defeated, because there is no other way out of this except Palestinians showing steadfastness in their homeland. And supporting their resistance. We have no other choice but to continue our struggle until return and liberation. But if Israel manages to displace Palestinians with bombs and wars and ethnic cleansing and genocide, I promise you, these Arab regimes, you know, especially the one next to Palestine, will never be the same again. In Egypt, in Jordan, these regimes will crumble, because Palestinians are not willing to experience another Nakba like they did in 1948 and 1967. This will not happen. Palestinians will rather die in their, or, you know, standing on their land than leaving Palestine.
Thank you, Mr. Khaled Barakat. We have multiple breaking news coming in. It's been an hour and 45 minutes now that the temporary truce that lasted 7 days, or an initial 4 day truce followed up by a 2 day extension, and the one day extension, nearly 350 prisoners were exchanged by the Hamas resistance movement and the Israeli regime. But that is all found its way to in a conclusion about an hour and 44 minutes ago. Now we're already hearing tank shelling by the Israelis at the Nuseirat and Burij refugee camps. Hamas and Israel are also engaged in fierce fighting in northern Gaza already, and an airstrike in Rafah in southern Gaza has left three Palestinians killed. Mr. Khaled Barakat just joined us for an extended conversation to shed more light on Israeli atrocities in Gaza, as it seems like they have resumed now after 7 days. Thank you, Mr. Khaled Barakat. Stay safe, journalist and activist there joining us from Vancouver, Canada. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has released more captives just before this truce expired, which was a part of the agreement with the Israeli regime. Eight captives consisting of two minors and six women, including dual citizens of Mexico, Russia, and Uruguay, were freed in the seventh round of the exchange deal.
People very good, very kind to me. Kulu tamam, food good, and the kindness, and everything good.
Two Russian citizens released on Wednesday were also counted on the seventh exchange list. Israel, in return, freed 30 Palestinians, including seven women and 23 children. The initial 4 day truce went into effect on November 24th, that's last Friday, and was extended twice up until this Friday morning. And since then, nearly 350 people from both sides have been released. The truce paused nearly 7 weeks of Israeli airstrikes that left more than 15,500 Palestinians dead, most of them women and children. Now, the newly released Palestinian prisoners have spoken about the dire conditions they faced in Israeli custody. Let's take a listen to their comments.
The situation inside the prison is not normal. It's a tragedy. It's like a ghost life. They said you were going for an investigation. When we were out to the yard, they told us we were going to be released in a soft deal.
What the prison authority did, such as beating, repression, aggression on prisoners, was so scary. Thank God the prisoners have high spirits. I hope all prisoners will be released soon. It was a surprise. I didn't expect to be released. This is because of God and the resistance in Gaza.
They cut off everything. They tortured us psychologically, physically, everything. I can't describe what happened. May God be beside the prisoners in other prisons. They beat us. There were people with bleeding eyes. Some people were beaten.
And we've heard multiple harrowing accounts just like the ones that we just shared with you. Meanwhile, an Israeli captive in the Gaza Strip has held the regime's prime minister responsible for the death of his entire family in indiscriminate airstrikes on the Palestinian territory. Yerden Bibas asked Benjamin Netanyahu to at least allow the bodies of his wife and two children to return to occupied territories for burial. Bibas made the plea in a video message released by the Al-Qassam Brigades, that's a military wing of Hamas. He said it was Netanyahu who killed his family through brutal bombardment of Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigades announced the death of Bibas's wife and two children on Wednesday. The brigades then offered to hand over the three bodies as part of the seventh batch of the prisoner exchange deal with Israel. The regime, however, refused to receive them. Breaking news coming in out of the besieged Gaza Strip that it is once again under heavy artillery and aerial attacks by the Israeli regime as the temporary ceasefire between Hamas and the Israeli regime expired about an hour and 48 minutes ago. We'll follow the developments in with respect to the resumption of hostilities there, so stay tuned for the latest. Meanwhile, a new report by U.S. media sheds light on the extent of the country's huge military support for Israel's war machine over the past 70 years. Reports say the U.S. has provided Israel with more than 70,000 consignments of military equipment between 1950 and 2022. Consignments include aircraft, ground vehicles, missiles, and bombs. Reports said U.S. has provided Israel with at least 16 types of weapons since start of this year alone. However, the exact number and types of those weapons has yet to be made public. According to the arms transfer experts, American weapons are being used extensively in the current Israeli war on Gaza. Israel is the largest recipient of U.S. foreign military assistance, with weapons accounting for the lion's share of that aid. The Pentagon announced in late October it will not put limits on how the Israeli occupation forces use American-made weapons. Political commentator Shabi Rizvi says Israel not only deliberately targets vital infrastructure in Gaza, but also cuts off the internet to prevent Palestinians from communicating their dire situation to the rest of the world.
Let's talk about just very quickly before the war, right? You already had the majority of the water that was coming into the Gaza Strip. It was contaminated. The majority of it was contaminated. It was causing sickness. And then you had the Israeli occupation even limiting access to food and construction materials. Very specifically, their ministers called it putting Palestinians on a diet, and that's exactly what they called it. Now, as you said, it's a completely different equation, where you know the infrastructure was already terrible, but now it's been bombed, it's been bombarded, it's almost non-existent. And so you'll have this new demands raised, and also the international community will be watching now more than ever that this besieged strip, this besieged strip that has been just completely occupied under surveillance and just cut off from the rest of the world for years, is now under a humanitarian crisis. The World Health Organization even says that you know more Gazans are probably going to die from disease and lack of resources than they actually are from the bombs themselves, which is horrific. And it also, it's worth mentioning that these infrastructure, they were specifically targeted. The water stations were targeted. Buildings that, you know, generated electricity, were targeted. From the very first week on, they cut off the electricity. And then now you also have the equation of how they get this information out to the rest of the world. If the Israeli occupation is able to cut off internet access at the flip of a switch, then what does that really say about the level of occupation they have over the Palestinian people? It says that not only are they capable of cutting off, you know, their water, their life-saving resources, but they're also willing to cut off the very methods of the Palestinians communicating their dire situation to the rest of the world.
The UN Security Council held a high-level meeting on Wednesday to discuss Israel's war on Gaza. The Turkish Foreign Minister, Hakan Fidan, made a blistering attack on the council for its failure to call for a permanent ceasefire in the besieged Palestinian territory, as Rashan Saglam reports.
The Turkish Foreign Minister has criticized the UN Security Council for its inability to call for an effective ceasefire in the Gaza Strip with one voice. Speaking during a Security Council session, Hakan Fidan said Israel's attacks against Gaza amount to war crimes.
Israel's brutal attacks on Gaza and its population constitute war crimes. We urge all civilized nations to disassociate themselves from those crimes. In such dire times, we need strong global institutions to enforce international law and protect moral compass of humanity. Unfortunately, the Security Council, which entrusted by the UN Charter to do so, time and again failed to fulfill its responsibility to maintain international peace and security. It was unable to call for an effective ceasefire with one voice.
Experts have also warned that the UN Security Council may lose its credibility. On the sidelines of the UN Security Council's meeting, a statement was made by the ministerial committee assigned by the Joint Arab-Islamic Extraordinary Summit that was recently held in Saudi Arabia. The statement said a truce deal regarding Israel's war on Gaza is not enough. It called for establishing a lasting ceasefire. The double standards of the UN Security Council have always been criticized by Turkey. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has said that the fate of the world should not be in the hands of a limited number of countries. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
The whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne. and thy prophets and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty wise.
Limelight. New figures show 345,000 businesses across the UK shut their doors in 2022, a 5% increase on the 328,000 that closed in 2021, and the highest figure since records began in 2002. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, a record number of businesses closed across the UK last year, according to a new report by the Office for National Statistics released recently. ONS data shows that the number of so-called business deaths increased from 328,000 to 345,000 between 2021 and 2022. That led to an increase in the death rate, or the percentage of active businesses that closed, from 11.2% to 11.8% over the 2 years. This figure surpassed the birth rate of new businesses being founded in 2022 for the first time since 2010. According to the report, 345,000 businesses across the UK closed in 2022, marking a 5% increase on the 328,000 that shut their doors in the previous year, and the highest figure since records began in 2002. Overall, 337,000 new businesses were launched in Britain nationwide in 2022, down from 364,000 the year before. ONS data indicated that transport and storage businesses struggled the most. The sector had the highest death rate at 23.8%, almost double any other industry. Information and communication businesses came in second at 13.6%, while accommodation and food services and retail industries had the joint third highest failure rate at 12.8%. On the positive side, information and communication also had a higher percentage of high-growth businesses than any other industry. An enterprise is characterized as high growth when its average annualized growth exceeds 20% per year over a three-year period. Growth can be measured by the number of employees or by turnover. The ONS data is a potential warning sign for the British economy, with more companies going out of business than started up for the first time in 2022, since the tail end of the financial crisis. According to the website of Workshop Guardian, the Institute for Public Policy Research, IPPR, said the rising number of closing businesses is a potential warning sign for the British economy, blaming high energy costs and the end of coronavirus pandemic support schemes. Office for National Statistics figures show around 440 businesses in Bassett Law ceased trading in 2022, up from 415 the year before. Some 4,270 businesses were active last year, meaning the business death rate, the percentage of businesses that closed, has risen to 10.3%. Dr. George Dipp, the head of the IPPR Center for Economic Justice, said, "This new data is a potential warning sign for the British economy, with more companies going out of businesses than started up for the first time in 2022 since the tail end of the financial crisis. While this isn't unexpected, high energy costs combined with the end of pandemic support schemes would always see a rise in company closures. It might signify that greater business support would have maintained higher economic activity." An economic expert announced that the standard multiplier for rates on high-value properties will increase in line with inflation, while the small business multiplier will freeze for a further year. The 75% business rates discount for retail, hospitality, and leisure will also be extended for another year. Nationally, transport and storage businesses had the highest death rate at 23.8%, followed by information and communication businesses at 13.6%, while accommodation and food services and retail industries were both at 12.8%. However, information and communication also had a higher percentage of growth businesses than any other industry.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Midstream.
The Palestinian resistance has triumphed, despite the chatter of the Israeli regime, whose prime minister is trying to cover this victory up by maintaining his warmongering threats. In spite of its brutality, the Zionist entity failed to achieve its goals with which it justified the genocidal war on Gaza and was unable to bring the Gazans to their knees and expel them from their homeland. Some may wonder about the validity of a victory while the enemy continues its aggression, assassinates Hamas leaders in Lebanon, and continues to kill and arrest civilians. The answer to that is that the most important event was Netanyahu and his cabinet submitting to negotiations with Hamas and reluctantly accepting a humanitarian truce, which he rejected at first. Netanyahu was forced to do so after losing all his cards. He was not able to eliminate Hamas nor weaken its offensive and defensive capabilities as he promised. The Israeli entity's image in the world was tarnished. It was isolated internationally, and its allies were forced to pressure it to stop the war, despite their knowledge that their political ally had gotten them into trouble and was already going through a bigger trouble that might lead him to resign under duress before he could be investigated and sentenced to prison. For the first time, Palestinians have tasted a real victory since the end of the direct colonization phase. With the announcement of the truce, all parties began to prepare to adapt to the new phase. The first of these parties is Israeli entity settler groups, whose internal battles will intensify in the next stage in an unprecedented manner. Gaza was victorious, and the Palestinian cause was victorious with it, because it returned to being the main cause of the entire world, and this has not been the case for many years now. This confirms that the Battle of the Al-Aqsa Flood is a battle of transformation that cannot be compared with any of the previous battles. The Islamic resistance movement Hamas proved today that it still controls the battlefield throughout the Gaza Strip, despite the Israeli occupation's rush a few days before the truce to announce that communication between Hamas and its fighters was cut off. However, Zionist media itself negated that fake news when Channel 12 reported that following the release of the first batch of Israeli entity prisoners in the Gaza Strip, anyone who hastened to suggest the defeat of Hamas should review himself. The ground events demonstrated absolute control by Hamas on the ground, as the resistance succeeded in implementing a ceasefire in the north and south of the Gaza Strip, despite the Zionist entity's army's announcement that Hamas had lost control over its operatives. Yet in reality, after 49 days of fighting, Hamas has proven that it is still as strong as day one and that it still controls the Gaza Strip at both the leadership and administrative levels. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Despite all the Western and Zionist river of lies declaring the defeat of Hamas inside the Gaza Strip after 49 days of fighting from October 7 till the day the ceasefire went into effect, Hamas has proven that it is still strong and that it is fully controlling Gaza. Now, the Palestinian resistance succeeded in imposing a ceasefire in the south and the north of the Gaza Strip, while the world watched as Al-Qassam knew how to bring its detainees at the specified time and to the appropriate place designated to hand them over to the International Red Cross in Khan Yunis Hospital. If anyone, after those 49 days, took a knee of defeat, it for sure, without any doubt, was not the Palestinian resistance Hamas. To discuss this issue with us from New York is Dan Kovalik, human rights lawyer, academic, and author. Thanks a million for being with us so early, Dan, to talk about these pressing issues happening in Palestine as we speak now. The Palestinian resistance, Dan, imposed most of its conditions in the past truce that was announced 4 days ago, the most important of which is that it imposed a truce for several days and not for hours, the way the Israeli entity was trying to push against the people, in addition to imposing the entry of humanitarian aid, much needed humanitarian aid and fuel to Gaza, despite the brutal strikes by the Israeli entity war machine. What do you think, in your opinion, was the main factor for the success of this truce?
Yes, well, of course, the main factor is what you mentioned, and that is the stiff resistance that the resistance fighters in Gaza have been giving to the Israeli Defense Forces. According to Israel's own figures, over 300 Something like 324 Israeli soldiers have been killed, and a number of their tanks, which they thought were indestructible, have actually been destroyed. By the way, the Palestinians think probably three times the number of Israeli soldiers that Israel claims to have been killed were killed, so that would make it about 1,000 Israeli soldiers killed. So, I've been reading that there's been desertions by the Israeli forces as a result of the resistance. So I think that is the biggest factor that brought Israel to this truce. But of course, there's several other factors.
Mm-hmm.
One is the support that Gaza is getting internationally from Hezbollah and Yemen, and also from resistance fighters in Iraq. All of them are engaged in various attacks, which are bogging down both Israel and the United States.
Well, Dan, the Israeli entity set a ceiling of great ambitions, if I may, internally and externally, and then faced fierce resistance and popular steadfastness inside of 363 square kilometers of very populated concentration camp of Gaza, which led that ceiling basically to crumble down on the Israeli entity leadership. Especially, we're talking about the heads of Netanyahu, about Gantz, and about Gallant. How come the Israeli regime was so delusional in estimating the real power of the Palestinian resistance when it's just right there in the Gaza Strip?
Well, I think that the powers that be in Israel are delusional about many things, and I think that is what will lead to their demise. They believe their own propaganda, that somehow they're an invincible force, that somehow they're the most moral army in the world, when in fact they seem to be the most immoral army in the world. But they believe their own propaganda. Also, their forces are used to being victorious over children and women in the West Bank, right? Well, that doesn't take very much. It also doesn't take very much to be victorious over hospitals and children in Gaza, which it seems that that's the only victories that they're able to claim. But it's quite another matter to engage with militant fighters in Gaza that are well-trained, that are well-seasoned, and frankly, who have something to fight for.
Mm-hmm.
And that is their homes and their land. And the Israelis don't have the same thing to fight for. And their morale is low and decreasing by the day. So I think that explains how Israel has overestimated itself. I think also the problem they have is they don't have a strategy in Gaza. Let's face it, 90% of the people they've killed in Gaza are civilians. Now, of course, that's by intention, but what that means is they're really not having the impact on the militant fighters that they claim to have, and they don't have a strategy to have an impact on them. So I think they don't know what to do at this point. And again, they now face the world. They face the world opinion on this. You have Joe Biden being called Genocide Joe. This is a problem. This is a problem. The moral cloak that Israel has draped itself in for so long has now fallen. And that's probably the biggest defeat that they have faced.
I think that right now the truce might get a bit elongated. It might be maybe made into more than the 4 days that they already initially agreed upon. But today, with the Battle of the Al-Aqsa Flood, or what is known internationally as October 7, the cabinet of the Zionist regime, as you mentioned, was defeated. However, what comes really after this battle, Dan? I mean, what will be the taste of this victory achieved by the Palestinian people in general, and the people of Gaza in particular, which has become some sort of an icon for humanity, especially those who aspire for liberation? How do you think this new phase will look like?
Yes, well, I think, first of all, we have to acknowledge in the short term, short to medium term, there will be much suffering in Gaza. They've already lost something like 20,000 lives that we know of, many of them children. Their infrastructure is in ruins. Their hospitals are in ruins. That will be something that the people of Palestine will have to grapple with. Hopefully the world will have to grapple with. But that will be the biggest challenge at hand. But I think in the long term, and maybe not real long term, I think the state of Israel is in trouble. I think something like 150,000 Israelis have already left Israel because of all this. All the settlements in the north of Israel have been vacated because of Hezbollah's fighting. The morale of Israel is very low. They had this reputation in much of the world, not all of it, but in much of the West, for, again, being this invincible moral actor. And both aspects of that claim are gone now. They're not seen as invincible, nor are they seen as moral. And I think that also impacts the younger generation of Jews in the world, and they will not be flocking to live in Israel, and Israel needs that. Israel can only survive by continuing generations move there, and I think that's not going to happen now. I think that Israel's probably facing an existential crisis, but it's of its own making. You know, it's now existentially threatened by how it has conducted this so-called war. It's not much of a war. I mean, in many ways, well, as many people acknowledge, and as I believe, it's a genocide, you know. So that will have lasting impact, and I think in the end, the U.S. leadership will have to think very hard how it relates to Israel in the future. I mean,
we will be talking about this specifically, about how really Zionism has failed utterly, not only in Gaza but at a global scale as well. But please, ladies and gents, do stay with us, because after the break we will see how Zionism was defeated in Gaza.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Well, this transformation could not have taken place in the Western mood towards a four-day ceasefire, except with the patience and steadfastness of the Palestinian people in defiance to the Zionist genocide, and with the legendary combat performance of the Palestinian resistance movements. These variables carved a new Palestinian victory and confirmed the inevitable defeat of Zionist Israel. More details in the following report.
Zionist Israel swallowed the poison of Palestinian resilience when the leaders of the occupying entity agreed to a four-day truce, most of whose conditions were dictated by the Palestinian resistance Hamas through mediators. This was an explicit Zionist Israeli admission of defeat in a war that approached 50 days. Politics is an extension of war by other means, and the results of any negotiations are linked to the balance of power on the ground, all of which was portrayed by Hamas as it imposed its conditions for the exchange of the first batch of detainees. The basic condition was the release of three Palestinian children and women from occupation prisons in exchange for one Zionist male or female prisoner, which is what the ill-fated trio in the occupation leadership, Benjamin Netanyahu, Yoav Gallant, and Benny Gantz, submitted to, while they all had insisted first on releasing what they called hostages held by Hamas without any agreement or reciprocation. Benjamin Netanyahu in particular showed uncontrollable verbal arrogance and exaggerated his belief that he could liberate the Zionist detainees by armed force. Then it became clear to him that he was chasing an illusion. The campaign of tens of thousands of his soldiers and elite forces in northern Gaza failed, and he was shocked by the catastrophic losses of his forces. Therefore, it was only natural after that for the enemy to bow its head, which has been buried deep in the mud since the flood attack of October 7, and to accept in a conceited manner what it had previously rejected, and to agree, along with its cabinet and its war council, to a scheduled ceasefire. Zionist Israel conceded to preventing its warplanes from flying during the ceasefire in the skies of Gaza. Zionist Israel agreed to double the flow of aid, including fuel, to the Gaza Strip. The occupation was also forced to implicitly acknowledge the continued rule of the Hamas movement in Gaza, and it is the same occupation that repeatedly described Hamas as a terrorist entity, while Hamas and the resistance factions broke the nose of its brutal, barbaric Zionist terrorist entity, which failed to fight man-to-man. The Zionist occupation failed miserably from the deadly zero distance, which we all watched in slow motion on our smartphones and TV sets. It failed miserably that it began to unleash its vengeful anger on defenseless civilians. The occupation planes and American bombs killed more than 20,000 Palestinian civilians, including about 6,000 still missing under the rubble, and demolished more than half of Gaza's buildings and most of its hospitals, schools, mosques, churches, mills, bakeries, vital facilities, and water desalination plants. All of this destruction took place while no white flag was ever waved across all of Gaza, despite starvation, thirst, and displacement. Gazans remained steadfast, refusing to flee their homeland, declaring sweeping support for the resistance factions, which humiliated the occupation army and ended the myths of its prestige, superiority, and delusional power.
Now we are back with our guest from New York, Dan Kovalik, human rights lawyer, academic, and also author. Thanks a million again for being with us, and I hope you were able to watch the report with us, Dan, because the Israeli entity media has estimated that the loss incurred by Hamas in the 49-day war was no more than 10% of the military strength of the Izzeddin al-Qassam brigades, which is the military wing of the Hamas movement, which is basically indicated by the superior doctrine, the fighting methods of Hamas, and the auxiliary resistance factions as well, which succeeded in maintaining their grounds and in fighting back even after Zionist Israel took a chunk of the northern part of Gaza. While the enemy was deteriorating, and as you said at the beginning of our first segment, that some of them are refusing to come back and fight to begin with because of Hamas. What happened to the fourth toughest army on the planet?
Well, I think it was never as tough as it claimed. As we were talking about, I mean, most of the soldiers there first of all, they're all conscripts, right? Basically, everyone has to serve in the military, which means a lot of people are serving against their will. Mm-hmm. And to the extent they have any experience, a lot of it is in, frankly, bullying children and women and other civilians, particularly in the West Bank these days. That does not prepare one for fighting armed militants with the type of resolve that the militants have in Gaza, right?
Well, it is also important to note out that while you were talking, I was just remembering that the last time that Zionist Israel was actually in an urban warfare was in 1982 Beirut. So they've not really fought this kind of war before. They did do some sort of an incursion to the West Bank during the summer to Jenin, but it lasted for no longer than 6 or 7 days, and it was fairly a very small area. So it is very tough for them to be fighting an urban warfare in Gaza. But let me talk a bit about your part of the world, Dan, because all the fake Israeli entity cards have basically just fallen. You mean no sane person would believe anymore the propaganda that is coming either from the Zionist narrative or from the Western narrative, especially the mainstream media one, starting with the claims that Hamas beheaded babies to them having victories against hospitals in Gaza. I mean, no one really believes that anymore, except they see the brutality of the Israeli war machine that has killed so far 20,000 humans, including 6,000 who are still under the rubble. But how is the Zionist image being perceived in your streets, in your community, in New York, for example?
Well, it's a bit schizophrenic. You know, the mass media is still largely on board with the Israeli project, with the Zionist project, and tries to, present Israel with the kindest face it possibly can, with very skewed coverage. You know, one example is the children released by Hamas are called children. The children released by Israel are called people under the age of 18, right? They won't even call them children. So they do their best to have a very skewed coverage. But the problem is people aren't paying attention to the news anymore. They're finding their news on Twitter and TikTok and Instagram. They are seeing the videos there of babies being pulled from rubble, of incubator babies dying in hospitals that Israel has attacked. And so the population is turning against Israel in a big way, and the media is not being trusted for what they're saying, right? 80% of Democrats, and of course it is a Democratic war because Biden is the president, 80% of Democrats oppose what Biden's doing in supporting this genocide. So they've lost the people. They have lost the people here in the United States. The government and the media have lost the people, and they've lost credibility, the government and the media, and I don't know how they're going to gain it back either. So the Palestinians really are leading a worldwide revolt is what's happening.
Well, Dan, the international level, the Zionist American Western Alliance was betting on marginalizing the Palestinian cause and putting it aside and propagating the so-called peace process or the Abraham Accords and strengthening the legitimacy of the occupation and its continued expansions of the occupation settlements, especially in the West Bank, and basically just Judaization of Palestine, urbanization of the lands, of historic, stealing historical and cultural identity of Palestine, and through expanding the circle of normalization, as we said, with more than the current Muslim and Arab states. But as you were just mentioning, and how the image of the Zionist entity has crumbled, do you think that also the projects of Zionism have crumbled inside of historic Palestine, or am I just being a bit more optimistic than usual today?
I think they're in the process of crumbling. I don't think they've completely crumbled, but I think they're in the process of doing so. I think that the Zionist belief in their own project is going to start to wither away because it's showing itself for what it is. The brutality cannot be denied anymore. A mirror has been put up in the face of the Israeli people, and they have to see that what they're doing is unjust. It does not comport with the ethics in the Jewish faith. It has nothing to do with that, right? Mm-hmm. A state has been replaced as the object of worship in the place of God, and nothing good can come of that. And I think that a lot of Israelis are seeing that. Again, a lot have fled the country and will not come back. I think less and less people, less and less Jews around the world will want to move to Israel. Again, the whole moral justification for Israel has collapsed in the last 6 to 7 weeks. And that attempt by Israel to normalize relations with the Gulf states is over. Mm-hmm. That's over. That was going to happen. Now it won't happen. Mm-hmm. And it's a big reason, by the way, of course, that the resistance began operations on October 7th. Remember, Netanyahu went to the UN and showed a map of the new Middle East, and it had no Palestine in it at all.
I think the Palestinian resistance was loud and clear on October 7, telling him that it was not up to him to erase historic Palestine from the map. It is up to the Palestinians themselves to bring back and liberate that land. Dan Kovalik, human rights lawyer, academic and author, our lovely and dear friend from New York. Thanks a million for being with us to discuss this very urgent matter. And I hope, ladies and gents, you got what you needed from this interview, because we need to know how the West is reacting to this. But at the same time, we need you in the West to know that the narrative of the natives of Palestine is being written by the Palestinian people as we speak. We always promise you to get you the latest from West Asia right here on the Mediastream. Assalamu alaikum.
Slogan of the Year 1402. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Every year, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, designates a slogan for the new Iranian calendar year. The leader designated the year 1402 as the year of inflation control and growth in production. This naming shows that the most important concern for the leader is the issue of economy. As is clear, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, like the previous years, highlighted the issue of economy as the access point in naming the New Year's slogan. In this series, we discuss the importance of the slogan of the year, 1402, as well as the relationship between inflation and production briefly. Stay tuned, please. Inflation is one of the indices of assessing a country's economy. Inflation has a direct relationship with people's lives as well as with a system's social capital. Meanwhile, inflation is one of the economic indices which is effective on the global status of a system as well. The enemies of the Islamic Republic, who have found the importance of inflation on the economy by imposing multilateral economic pressures on the country, are trying in vain to increase an unbridled inflation in Iran, thereby paving the way for a confrontation between people and the system. Although Iran's enemies have failed to achieve their goals, it's the duty of the Iranian government to pave the way for reducing the people's problems as well as increasing their satisfaction. In this regard, leader of the Islamic Revolution, in his Nowruz message for the year 1402, described inflation as a bitter point of the year 1401 and said, "In my opinion, in 1401, the most important issue for the nation was the issue of the country's economy, which is directly related to people's livelihoods. On the matter of the economy, there were bitter moments, but also sweet ones. There was bitterness in some sectors, which I will mention, and there were also sweet moments in some cases concerning the economy. These matters should be seen together, alongside each other, and then an overall evaluation can be made about them. The bitterness was mainly because of inflation and high prices, which is truly upsetting, especially the increase in the price of food and the basic necessities of life. When there is a significant increase in food prices and the prices of basic necessities, the economically weaker sectors of society are the ones who are impacted the most, because food items and the main essential living supplies have the largest share in their household basket. As a result, the pressure is mainly on them. And this, of course, was one of the bitter occurrences. In my opinion, regarding the major economic issues of the country, this issue was a more fundamental, significant matter that was bitter. Weakness of production life in Iran and consequently the rise of inflation rate, the depreciation of national currency and capital flight have a 200-year-old background in Iran and are now the most important social issues in the country. By saying that it is an issue, we mean that it is inclusive and that the public opinion is sensitive to and concerned about resolving it. Being an issue is particularly important from this point of view that since a decade ago, people's lives have been affected by the most severe waves of inflation, which has resulted in purchasing power loss, which is followed by outbreak and prevalence of certain social harms, as well as the decline in some of the living standards in the country. Regarding this issue, emphasize